So the first thing we want to do is, because this is radio, is we want to all introduce ourselves. Would you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, I'm Zach Holtzman. I play guitar and do a little bit of singing in Dengue Fever.
Hi, my name is Ethan Holtzman from Dengue Fever. I play keyboards and organs.
Hi, my name is Shamni Mol. I'm a singer from Dengue Fever.
But we think you're in the Black Eyed Peas at this moment.
Yeah, you guys.
What I'd like you to do is add some things to the story that we don't know. Because the bios are there. We know what you did. We know you went over there. We know you had a fascination for 60s Cambodian rock. We know you found a killer lead singer in Long Beach. We know all of that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, like one time when we played Moscow, my brother brought his Farfisa to Moscow and they put it in like the belly of the plane and it got all cold. And a Farfisa is like this old vintage, you know, Italian keyboard organ. And so we're supposed to play the next day and he takes it out and all the F chords are all the F notes are all out of key. And so like he's leaving it on for like 3 hours hoping it'll warm up. And
you can always put it, you know, I've tried with a Farfisa because I'm a keyboard guy. You just put it in the microwave. Yeah. You put it in the microwave, some of the keys melt, but you know, you get a warmer sound. You get a Hammond B3 sound instead out of a Farfisa. It doesn't sound like the Monkees. It sounds like, you know, somebody else.
Yeah.
The language that you're involved with has quite a few dialects. So what must be interesting when you're working on songs is this is not like writing lyrics for a pop song. There's a lot to think about as you're doing this, right?
I mean, we keep it in mind with subject matter, and we also keep it in mind with, like, when we're translating it. You know, like, I'll write something in English, and it'll be, like, somewhere between 8 and 12 syllables long, like a sentence, you know, a phrase. And we translate it into Khmer, which is Cambodian.
Right.
And all of a sudden, it's 20 syllables, you know?
Right.
And it doesn't work. So the lines get stretched out to this ridiculous amount. So anyway, we have to whittle them down and shave them down, lose all the thes and its and whatever, words that don't even make a difference anyway. We boil it down to the essence of the song. So it's this cool filtration process that happens, and we end up with this crazy Cambodian haiku that becomes the song.
So what was interesting to me in kind of doing my research is that this genre of music was totally effaced by the Khmer Rouge, right? It was pretty much knocked out. So was this a classic case? I'm curious to hear you. Was this a classic case of that they just wanted to ban popular rock and roll music? Or was it the politics behind the music itself?
Yeah, the Khmer Rouge were really strict.
Yeah.
So if you were a doctor, you were probably killed. If you were a singer or a songwriter or an artist, you probably died during that regime unless you hid the fact that you were doing that. And a lot of musicians pretended that they were not playing music, and they worked in the rice fields and they got by. And a couple years ago, we were able to go back there and meet some of these musicians and record with them. And it was a really cool thing. We made a documentary. It's called Sleepwalking Through the Mekong.
The pop music was really the result of Armed Forces Radio, right? Because the fact of the matter is that, you know, in Cambodia and Vietnam, pretty much any place during the wars, if it weren't for Armed Forces Radio kicking out pop music, there's no way that that music would have ever gotten into the heads of the country.
Yeah, I mean, Dengue Fever started, we were heavily influenced by the 60s musicians in Cambodia. Regardless of the war, though, it's like, yeah, that's what people say. They say during Vietnam, you know, the GIs, the soldiers, they were listening to The Doors, Booker T, and this music then became, you know, the Cambodians took it, twisted it, added their own traditional elements, and came up with their own product. And that's what inspired us. But who's to say, because during that time in the West, music was huge in the 60s. It was very popular, and I think that it could have bled to Asia on its own. I don't know if it, people say, yeah, it came from Vietnam, but you know, maybe it would have gotten there anyway.
They had, like, I heard, because our friend John Perazzi, who is the director of our documentary, he's making another really cool documentary on all the 60s music from Cambodia called Don't Think You've Been Forgotten. And he told me that they had one studio that everyone recorded at.
Oh, so that was like their Stax or their Motown or whatever.
Yeah, and they had, like, you know, a Farfisa organ. They had a couple guitar amps. They probably had some homemade guitars. And it's just amazing what they busted out, you know? And the cool thing is, like sometimes you listen to other countries that were, like, you know, doing their thing in the 60s, and it's just like straight up whatever Beatles kind of sound. And just Cambodia did a really great job with bringing in what they had to what we had and merging it together. And so that's what we tried to do too. We that was like a diving board that we took a spring off of, and then we just take it off in our own crazy direction and just bring whatever we got and everything we got to putting it into what we make.
So a lot of people first heard you in City of Ghosts and a very different version of Joni Mitchell, and I read somewhere that that was pretty complicated.
Oh, yeah. We covered Both Sides Now, and our first translation of that came back. The guy who we gave it to was like a friend of a friend, and he kind of like, I knew a little bit of Khmer, Cambodian, and like I was looking at hearing Nimal sing the lyrics, and I was like, wait a second. She's not singing about, you know, bows and flows and angel hair and ice cream castles in the air. I mean, that's kind of pretty obscure stuff. I don't know how you translate that.
Yeah, how do you translate? I mean, even in English, it doesn't mean. When you think about half of Joni, when you think of half of Joni Mitchell's lyrics in English, they don't mean anything.
She's a
right?
Genius.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, we recorrected it and came up with a good, much better translation. And you know, the Joni Mitchell Society okayed our translation, and it all worked out really beautiful. And it was seemed like a perfect song for the end of that movie, because it was like, you know, two cultures merging together. And also, I don't know if you've seen that film, but Matt Dillon kind of comes to a serious realization about how to not be an asshole in this world and how to just live a better life.
When he was trying to recruit you for this band, I hope he's not going to get mad at me, was there a beard issue of some sort?
Just after September 11, and then a lot of Cambodian people can recognize and think about Zagani, then come, you know, play or something, just talking, not serious, and they just play. And then my friend, they say, don't listen to them. Those guys just hang out and just want to talk to you because you're a girl, you're beautiful, something like that. I say, okay, but Ethan gave me a CD and said, how come they know that? How come they know the song from 1960 from Cambodian rock and roll, a pop? That time, and then after that, I asked my friend, she speak English. That time I don't understand that much. I say, and those guys, they want me to sing with the band. So what do you think? And then we have to do practice together. And what do you think about that? And my friend say, try it, do it. You know, he says, try. And then we come to the rehearsal, the first time we see together. And then my friend listening, and then she say, yeah, great. They can't play the music.
Good intentions we have. We rented suits. We rented some Mercedes, black Mercedes, drove on down to Long Beach, tried to look professional. But, you know, she had a hard time. They're all hung up.
Rock and roll mafia arrives in Long Beach.
Hung up on my brother's mustache and my beard. And, you know, it almost didn't work out because of the facial hair. Yeah.
You know, you never know what it's going to take. I love this quote about the film that you said. Sleepwalking through the Mekong is about the beauty that transpires when music that was all but lost inspires music freaks from LA to invest all they've got in an idea to help their singer return home after 5 years away. You guys aren't passionate enough. You need to work a little harder to get this methodology through. What do you think?
Well, I just think...
Or you're just nuts, you know, whatever it takes, right?
I mean, I think we just got to constantly... We had to prove to ourselves that we could go to Cambodia and play this music for Cambodians. And it was sort of like we got a lot of credibility by doing that. And now we're going to get back there and we're going to do a tour of the Mekong and play it for all the provinces. And we're working with the Wildlife Alliance and the World Wildlife Fund, which are some charities that are doing some great stuff over there. So we're going to help stop poaching of the animals and help save the Mekong, and it's a good thing for the world, and it's gonna be good for the band.
Yeah, we're gonna like rent a boat and just tour up the Mekong River, playing shows in all the towns, and spreading the word of which animals are, you know, people should ease up on. I think it's gonna be a lot of fun. We're gonna document it for sure.
That's great. Yeah. Well, you've had a lot of luck. Oh, you know, Broken Flowers. That must have been an amazing thing for you to be included on that soundtrack. That must have been very cool.
I've always been a fan of Jim Jarmusch's films, you know? Like Down by Law, Dead Man, Strangers in Paradise, you know? And then, oh, just so many. I've seen like probably everything he's done. And so then all of a sudden when he realizes that we exist, it's just, you feel like, cool. And it just happened real naturally too. Next thing you know, we got a tune in his film and everyone's flipping out.
You've got a fan in this Gabriel guy, this Peter guy. And you're working in his studio. You really are having a really tough time of it right now, aren't you? So tell me a little bit about what you're working on there.
We recorded some music in his studio. It's a great spot. It's the Real World Recording Studios, and they're like ancient. There's crop circles across the street, and there's Stonehenge, and it's in the Wiltshire County. And basically, we just recorded some songs, and they were interested. They were talking with us, and we're just kind of taking it one day at a time.
So you're going to kind of figure out what to do with this music now.
Well, that was for a fancy speaker company, so who knows what's going to happen. We're just working on new material, and we'll find the right label wherever we wind up.
But I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich, and what it is two of your songs is the bread, and then we want to fill in about 40 minutes with anything else you want to play in between by anybody you want, and I'll be under obligation to play it.